Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 143, featuring Mahmoud Al-Kawadri. And he is a very interesting person. You know, I've actually had a lot of fascinating people on this podcast. I've had some amazing people, lots of Oscar winners, etc. But a lot of people I bring on, sometimes they say, I don't know why you want to do a podcast with me. I don't have very interesting things to say. And I think Mahmoud is a perfect example of the fact that everyone has an interesting thing to say. And one of the things I've loved the most about doing this podcast is the fact that I have had amazing conversations with everyone. And it's really allowed me to open up and to listen to some incredible stories. Mahmoud, I met the first time at THU 2016, and I also saw him at the D2 conference earlier this year. And this podcast was recorded during THU 2017. I actually did a whole bunch of podcasts for THU TV, but this one was different. I did this one in my room, and it ended up being really great. I've had conversations with Mahmoud in the past, but he and I were hanging out at the King Oasis over at THU, and it was, I said, you know, you and I have to be on this podcast. We have to do one. So he came on. He's a fascinating person. Originally from Syria, and we talked a lot about creative culture and how Assyria has played for years, centuries, an important role in the creative process and the creative thought leadership in the Middle East, and what it's been doing. And of course, how it's been impacted by the war. He now lives in Berlin. He does architecture visualization. He's actually started his own company. That was inspired by THU 2016, what he saw there, and sort of began going on and doing his own work. And he's also really into the visual effects and trying to do more work and getting into visual effects. And we have conversations about that as well. So it's a really great podcast. And I really like Mahmoud. I think he's a fascinating person, and I think he's really going to go places. So I can't wait to see where he goes. There's no really big announcements. Very, very soon, maybe even this week, we will be shifting all of Labs over to the actual Chaos Group site. So it's actually going to be rebranded, redone, and we'll have a fresh new look. So all the podcasts will be posted there. Everything will be posted there, and it's going to be kind of brand new. So I urge you guys to go ahead and go check that out and tell me what you guys think. I'd love to hear your feedback. So that's what I have to say. Of course, you guys know how to get in touch with us, so I'm not going to rehash all of the Twitters and Facebooks and emails, etc., but we'd love to hear from you if you have any other ideas. And that's about it. Oh, wait, no, one more announcement. Turns out I am going to be going to Houston, where I will be one of the speakers for the ASAI, which is the American Society of Architectural Illustrators. I'm very excited to do that. It's going to be really interesting. I was asked to be one of the speakers at the last minute, and I accepted. And I'm proposing to do a talk which is relating human portraiture and digital humans with architectural renderings, and how there's actually a lot of similarities or lessons learned from both sides that we can learn from. So I think that's going to be a really interesting thing. The other cool thing is that it's 2017, as you guys know, and that means that it's been 20 years since I graduated from Rice University, which is also in Houston, and will be near the conference. So I'm actually going to go to Rice and see if I can see if some of my old pals and my old mentors and do a podcast with them and talk about how our lives have changed in the last 20 years. So that's going to be some exciting stuff as well. All right. Hopefully you guys will enjoy this awesome podcast with Mahmoud. Seriously, this one is one of my favorite ones. I love it when I meet awesome people like Mahmoud. Thanks, guys. Hopefully you enjoy it.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, You need to make sure everything has fur now.
So Mahmoud, what first time I think we met was at THU, right?
Yes, last actually, year. Last year THU.
Yeah.
2016 we met. And we met also in D2 conference this year.
This year, yeah. You were at D2.
I'm in D2, yes. Exactly. And yeah.
But let's give people a little bit of a background into to what you've been doing.
I mean, I am an architect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a CG artist. I mean, my background, my educational background is... Okay. My educational background in Syria, I have studied diploma engineering for 5 years, architectures.
Uh-huh.
And within this time, I also have like studied animation.
Okay.
In a small academy there. I always wanted to do like animation, visual effects, more than architecture, but for Arabic culture and Middle East culture, still art is not considered as real jobs.
Okay.
For us. So I have to fulfill like real job for them by studying architecture and do that like separately at night and studying animation, visual effects for me.
Okay.
And... But during my study in architecture, my most focus was in animation. I used to work in animation in the studio in Damascus in Syria. Mm-hmm. The idea, there was a huge market in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
What
is in Syria? So Syria obviously now has a lot of, not necessarily as big a demand, but back when then, we're like, what was the demand for?
The demand was a country like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and all those Gulf countries shifted all their commercial advertisement, everything towards Syria.
Really?
Yes.
Why did they do that?
I mean, we have really good artists there.
Okay.
I mean, we have really good artists. We have really good direction there.
Mm-hmm.
But since the war started, they shifted everything towards Malaysia and China.
Interesting.
Yeah. But mostly because we have a drama. I mean, as a TV, Syria is famous for TV series dramas.
Okay.
And for movies. And we have this... this fast Ramadan month,
uh-huh.
where people do lots of series, and the whole year people works like the whole year for this month. So basically, we have a huge production for this area.
For Ramadan?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a special series that happens just at Ramadan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And for that also, in between series, they do commercials. So we managed to do it for them.
Okay. And what was it like to work in Syria with doing that kind of stuff? I mean, was there many studios that were doing animation?
I mean, it's not many studios. It's like 4 or 5
okay.
main studios. But all they are like on one compound. So you are shifted between some of them. Some of them is gaming. They bring games from Korea, mm-hmm. and they just transfer it for Arabic versions of it.
Right.
The other things of them is like we have this channel, cartoon channel called Spacetoon, and we manage it to do it for them.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mostly also we for animation and cartoon, we depend on Japanese anime.
Uh-huh.
For us.
Anime, okay.
And we just, you know, do the doublage of it.
Right. Okay. And that's popular in Syria?
So much.
Really?
Actually, not just in Syria, in all Middle East.
In all the Middle East,
in
right.
all Middle East.
Interesting. I didn't know anime was so popular there.
Yeah, no. It's like our childhood animation.
Really?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I can imagine that's probably a very, like anime, it does have a creative influence on people, and for sure.
Yeah, but for us, I mean, everything's like doublage, everything's translated and
yeah.
shifted towards us.
Yeah.
They started Egypt started to make a doublage for Disney movies
right. Okay.
and adapt it.
Right.
So we are more concentrated on Japanese anime and they are more concentrated about Disney.
Interesting. Okay. And so so how long were you doing that?
I've been doing that since 2006 started.
Okay.
I started. Officially, I started around 2008 to mm-hmm. work mm-hmm. toward that while I'm studying. And then I get scholarship to Berlin to study master for architectures.
Okay.
And while that, because beyond the world, I lost my content. I have a content in visualization. So I get scholarship in architecture and I have visualization portfolio. So I make my concentration in these areas.
Okay. And which school did you go to in Berlin?
Berlin Technical University.
Okay. Yeah.
I studied there for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
But since the day I came to Berlin, I found a studio called Punkt&Phase in Berlin. It's mm-hmm. It's actually the first visualization studio in Germany.
Okay.
And they are more concentrated in Middle East area, and they have like this area like specializes it of it. Mm-hmm. So they found my portfolio fit for them. So
right.
I just started with them from beginning, like since 4 years.
Right. Yeah. And so you studied architecture. You got your degree.
I actually studied architecture 7 years in Damascus and 2 years
in Germany. But you stayed in Germany.
Yeah, I'm staying now in Germany. So, now I'm based in Berlin.
Yeah, so you're based in Berlin. So how long have you, so you working for the same company?
No. Now after that, I started working for exhibition company. They do exhibition for Deutsche Telekom.
Oh right, okay.
There's this two exhibition called IFA and CeBIT.
Okay.
And they are, except this is the largest computer expo and technology.
Yes. Yeah.
So in Hannover. So I used to work with them as a visualization.
It's kind of like architect. It's basically like the CES in Europe, right?
Yes.
Which is the commercial CES is the.
Yeah, but
consumer electronics show.
That's yeah, this is more toward technology and
yes.
networking and stuff.
Right.
So
it's a pretty big conference, right?
Yeah. It's largest expo for computer.
Right.
In Hanover. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we were a company like focusing for Deutsche Telekom. We do for them the exhibition. Started
uh-huh.
from visualization to advertisement to everything.
So like the booth and all that stuff.
All of the stuff, yes,
right.
Exactly. So I worked for a year and a half. THU, I decided to start my own.
Things. Right. So when was your first THU?
Last year? Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty new to work by myself.
Okay. So what made you make that decision? Was it THU that made you make that decision?
Kind of, yes. Actually, kind of feel like when you come to those kind of conferences, art conferences, you have the feeling that... Actually, the feeling has started in Paris. It's art masterclass. I met Alan and Alan McKay, and I had decided to enter his mentorship.
Right.
So I can go back towards animation and visual effects.
Uh-huh.
But the day I reach here in THU, it's kind of like, you know, it's point where shift. I mean, the meaning of THU, are you ready for transformation? This is what drives me, like, you know.
Right.
To step up and have my own path. I mean, at the beginning, it's hard, but you have to do it. At some point of your life, you have to do it. Otherwise, you cannot.
But what drove you to come to THU? Was it because you heard about the animation part of it? Or?
No, I mean, actually, I heard about THU from the beginning. But THU was not affordable for me at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But it always was on the plan. I mean, in some of my friends in Berlin, I heard about them, how the experience they have it here.
Mm-hmm.
And I see some THU TV, like the first edition of it, and I wanted to come. I want to experience it.
Right.
I mean, it's really transformation area. You feel like you are reincarnated again.
Yeah, and it's funny because I've met you a few times, and you are you seem like a very serious person that doesn't necessarily say things that are exaggerated.
No.
and when you said that, you know, I've been talking to several people that are at THU and they've never, you know, experienced it or been here. And I was like, you're going to feel strange or different after you come here.
I mean, one of the things that drive THU for its success, I mean, they have this leadership of gathering people,
right.
Have them as a family.
Right.
Not just having them as the ego of every artist is equal.
Right.
That everybody, like, you know, everybody advise you, everybody give you tips.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody is welcoming. And this idea of talking to everybody, like stepping up in this oasis and talk to everybody and have this experience and how they manage their own business is mm-hmm. fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's really good. And I think, you know, even, you know, I saw you at the Oasis, I think it's called the King Oasis now.
Yeah.
I saw you there last night, and because you and I have been here before, and because several of the people down there had been there before, they immediately strike up conversation with whoever all the time.
Exactly.
And it immediately becomes infectious. Everyone just talks to each other.
I mean, I haven't experienced it really well in any other like, you know, conferences at the beginning, always like this, you know, this shy point and this breaking point.
Right.
You cannot find it. But here is like, I guess it's really smart. They have this first 2 days. They just let people engage with each other.
So, right.
I mean, this is makes a huge difference for the sure. rest of the days.
Yeah, no, I think absolutely makes a big difference. I think that's the point, is that you are engaged from the beginning, like you said, you know?
Yeah.
So you came here last year, you saw the conference, and you decided, I need to try this on my own. I need to do something. So what did you do?
I mean, I didn't decide on my own. Something's like happening. There is like, in my company, was a problem. Mm-hmm. And I figured out, let me try it for first 6 months, how it's going to be, like,
sure.
to be by yourself.
Right.
And since then, I tried it first, like since the beginning of this year, and I felt like the beginning was really good, mm-hmm. tops. But what I felt is like, then it's go down. What I felt is like, I'm not lacking of skills as an artist or as an architect. What my lacking is the skills of business.
Yes.
I mean, this is the idea that always like mysterious for me, because when you go for example, for architecture school, you learn design, you learn construction or calculation, mm-hmm. but nobody tell you how the architecture business is ready.
Right.
It's like you feel like all university has this systematic policy that when you finish your school, you do your own portfolio and you send it to office and you work for 10 years until you are a project manager. Then you realize how this field works.
Right.
Then you said like, yeah, let me step up and have my own company. But then you realize like you are at 40 or at 50 years old.
Right.
And then you started. I mean, I'm always considering why nobody was able to start his own business.
From the beginning.
From this beginning.
Yeah.
Also, yesterday we talked about it because you feel nowadays that architect is missing their fingerprint, the new architect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for example, when you talk about it, because I started my own company, I had like to start like studying entrepreneurships and businessing. And one of the book fascinated me is called The 22 Immutable Law of Marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was two laws. It's remarkable like this. The first one is leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be leadership in your area. But if you cannot be managed,
mm-hmm.
you have to do, there's a lot of category. You have to find a category,
mm-hmm.
fit within your area and to be a leader with it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I start analyze it, for example, Zaha Hadid, is Zaha Hadid exactly what this did? She find her own new, she create her own new categories for mm-hmm. parametric and organic designs.
Mm-hmm.
She fitted in the market of architecture and she is a leader of it.
Yeah, right.
And that's what I'm trying in the meanwhile to have it. That's what I'm trying. But this ideas is never has been discussed in architecture school or art.
We did at Rice University, we had, and I've got to tell you, it was not sufficient, but we did have one class that tries to teach you about the business. And what I learned is that the business is kind of not a good business.
Yeah.
Architecture, your profit margins are fairly low.
Yes, exactly.
And because it's a creative business and there's provisions, et cetera, and you're a service industry, gets it.
Yeah, but for example, like when you start, how can I find this investor or developer that gamble on my design and
right.
invest on me? This is not an easy.
You know what's even worse than architecture? Visual effects.
Might be.
Yeah, it is. Because the profit margins in visual effects is like 4%.
Okay.
And because they have a lot of people that are competing for the same five movies that are getting done, and they make very little money that way. And the artists get paid pretty well, but the companies, a lot of companies go bankrupt, right? So.
Yeah, but I guess as an artist, you know what to do. You know that the first step is to have networking and have really good portfolio.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you can start it, even when you want to start your own business company, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for an architect, this idea is not an easy idea.
No,
it's hidden.
I think I really like the thing that you were saying where you have to be about 40 years old before you really understand how the business works. And by then, how can you start it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, why can't a 25-year-old architect just graduating start a business on their own?
Exactly. I mean, when I read the history of Zaha Hadid, the first project when she was like 45 years old,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's crazy. It's mean like you study architecture for 10 years, then you practice it for another 15 years.
Right.
Until then you said like, now I am ready to do my first design.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and nowadays the new generation they are not this passionate about it. They are not patient.
Right.
To wait 25 years.
Right.
Everything's
right.
Goes accelerated fastly and we right. need to find a way. I mean.
Yeah. I think that it's very, very important. I think that that what people are actually doing makes sense for the architects. But what there's something happening at THU right now that's called the B-side stuff. Have you seen
that? Yes, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I mean,
we should probably, people may not know. So explain what you think B-Sides is or what you...
I mean, B-Side is basically explaining how the business in visual effects and CG market is going to be.
The creative business.
The creative business, exactly.
And so I think it would apply to architecture too.
I mean, yeah, similar of it, but still the target is different.
Right.
I mean, the target of it different. For example, for creative market, you can... use social media. Social media play a huge role for creative market. You can post it in ArtStation, you can post it in Facebook, and you get attention, you get the works. For architect,
the only problem I have with some of those social networks, and I think they're great because they definitely expose a lot of people, but people get addicted to the likes, right?
Yes, sure.
And it's ridiculous. There's some people like, why did my art not get featured on the front because I have more likes than this person? And it's
this is ridiculous. I mean, this is just a personal things. But for example, I mean, just, you know, they're getting noticed. For architects, we don't have this kind of platform. Unless you are an architect and you have been mentioned in Arc Daily or...
Right.
Those, yeah. But we don't have this kind of platform that people get engaged together and share information and, you know, you have this presence for you.
Right. It's true. You're right. But that's not necessarily the way architecture is set up, right? So let's say you graduate from architecture school, yeah. Right? You're not going to go out there and just start making random projects and put it on social media. You're going to have to get a job at an architecture firm, right?
I mean, yes, for sure. You have to get architecture jobs at the beginning and you have to be engaged more with competitions.
Right.
Yes, competitions play huge roles. I mean, I guess...
And also the fact that even just practicing architecture, you have to learn about, all right, well, this is how you have to design a stairs, like to make them functional.
Yeah.
You know, this is how bathroom, like even the most boring things, right? I remember my first internship at an architecture company. I was, you know, doing the drawings for the inside of an elevator.
Right? Yes. Yeah, I know that.
It's not very exciting.
I mean, and this part is the boring part in architecture
sure.
design until you reach the part that you like it, like you feel like you.
But that takes a long time. And I guess but it brings up the question that you had last night, which we were talking about. It's like, where are all the new architects?
Exactly. Where are the new architects? Why they are missing this fingerprint? For example, when you walk in the street and you saw a building, if it's a famous building, you can recognize it from its architect.
Right.
You can see like a white building and you can say like, this is Richard Meier
right.
style. Or this is Santiago Galdra. Nowadays, architect... Nobody has this kind of touch or this fingerprint that everybody like.
But they used to be, was it Progressive Architecture? They used to have an article that came out every year and it would be top 30 under 30. And it was there, or 40 under 40. Maybe it was 40 under 40. Because by the time you graduate architecture school, if you're going to get a master's, you're 27. So if you're if you're famous right out of school,
you'll be to 40.
Yeah, at least get to 40, right?
Exactly.
But it's top 40 under 40. Like if you're 35 and a famous architect, that's an accomplishment, right?
Yes, for sure.
But that does take a lot. It's a huge amount of work. It's a huge amount of work.
I mean, it's a huge amount of work. From day you enter architecture school, it's a huge amount of work.
Right.
I mean, you don't see any college that stay the whole night like we work the whole night.
So
we sleep
the same
at the university.
Yeah. Okay. It's interesting because, you know, we did that in the United States too, obviously. I was, you know, pretty much slept at the school,
yeah.
You know, after my classes are over, then I'm still at the studio working for another 10 hours.
Exactly.
And it was funny because I remember someone saying, I said, no other profession works student, right? Anyone that's studying a subject, yeah. No one works more than an architect. Doctors possibly come close.
Yeah, maybe, because they are like, they have those shifts. But I mean, as for creative field, we are like the dominant of it.
Right. It was interesting, yeah, because you know, the other thing that's interesting, when I went into visual effects, there's actually a lot of architects that had made the shift. So just, it's encouraging for you if you want to know that that story. But then when I started going in, they were like, you know, if you're coming from architecture and you're going to visual effects, just let you know that the hours can get pretty long. It's like, you know, I come from architecture, right?
I mean, exactly of it. But actually, architecture helps when you go for visualization, or you start to do any type of 3D in architecture.
Right.
It's like a breaking point to shift towards like visual effects.
Right. Yeah.
Because we tend to do more photorealistic things. We tend to understand the light in real life.
Right.
Of it. And it's just a matter of shifting towards cinematic art, or you have your own.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that, because I do agree, and I've mentioned it a few times, but since you're saying it, and I don't think you've heard me say it, but I do think that architects have actually innovated quite a bit in the CG world without necessarily realizing that they've done
I mean, definitely.
With lighting specifically.
Lighting and environment. Environment is based on architecture.
Right.
An architecture building, whether they existed or they are futuristic.
Right. But don't you think that environment artists they are an architect, but don't you think they could benefit from learning from architecture?
Well, I guess much better, yes.
Right.
I guess they can... I mean, the understanding of architectural elements will help then. Understanding how the light, how the shade,
but
how
the material. But what about even just architecture history? Like maybe they've never heard of Le Corbusier. Maybe they've never heard of Mies van der Rohe.
Sure.
Maybe they've never heard of who knows who else.
Sure. For example, like one of my favorite environment artists, Raphael Lacoste.
Yeah.
We're talking about him, and he has like a huge knowledge in architecture, and he talk about Toyo Ito, and he talk about Tadao Ando and everything.
Right.
I guess most of the environment artists have this huge reference of architecture.
Some do, but some don't, I don't think. And that's what I think is important, is that I think they should
I mean, also, this is what difference one who understand environment from others.
And I think this is especially true when creating environments, but also... The number one thing that's the most important thing in like that I cover a lot of is virtual reality.
Yeah.
And virtual reality is all about making environments. So let's bring the architecture knowledge back into that, which I think is horribly lacking right now in VR.
I mean, the idea, architects market are so slow in technology to adapt the new technology.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we have this kind of problem that we adopt this technology after 10 years of its existence.
Okay, yes and no. And I'm going to say a little bit disagree here, because, for example, you mentioned lighting, right?
Yeah.
Architects are very good at lighting, especially when it came to visualization,
yes.
Right? So architects unknowingly revolutionized what became global illumination, and were doing it long before anyone in visual effects were doing it. And so that was a technology. They did it unbeknownst to anyone else, right? And I really believe that architects are going to figure out virtual reality and how to the best practices and what to do about it before anyone else.
I mean, might be yes, but how the market will adapt it to use. I mean, is it the architect, because architects are afraid to use this kind of new technologies.
Some are. I don't know. I mean, ArcViz companies are not afraid to do it.
Yes.
They're making money doing it right now.
Yes.
But
But you can use virtual reality to improve your own design. If you are an architect and you design it and you just implement it.
Yeah.
And you can see where the faults in your design, you can adapt it. And this idea, I guess it will take some time.
It will, but there's always the guy. There's always one guy in an architecture office who has like, oh, you got to try this. And all the designers are going, no. And then they say, just put it on your head once and you'll see. And they do it and they're like, oh, I get it.
Yes.
So I think maybe, I don't know, we'll see. So what do you think? I want to go back to your thing about there's no young architects, right? Or there's no people that are out there. What do you think is the cause of it? And what do you think needs to change?
I mean, first, I'm kind of all system in architecture that is 5 years instead of 3 years of architecture.
So okay.
I mean, 3 years is not educationally, is like, you know,
right,
adequate.
Right.
To have this knowledge. Secondly, is just to have a bit of businessing and entrepreneurships about architecture field to be more obvious. Not everything's in hidden backgrounds. Will be kind of, and the freedom of design is not. I mean, there's this 3 or 10 architecture universities that are famous, giving people the freedom of design, like AA or SciArcs, things. But most of the other university have adopted the old traditional system.
Yeah.
Knowing design process, then the material and sustainability nowadays is a huge topic for them.
Sure.
And that's it.
Right.
But you're not. For example, one of my major problem in Berlin, Germany is Bauhaus style.
Right.
And for me, I'm more in towards parametric and organic. And when you discuss it for them, they deny it or they...
Interesting.
They didn't agree with it for it.
What's funny is that Patrick Schumacher is like...
German.
Is German.
Exactly. I mean, he's a German, but...
And he wrote the book on parametricism.
Yeah, but actually they convince you because you don't have the answer for them.
Right.
They are really good, for example, at engineering. They are really good at sustainability material, at the cost, how they manage the cost of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do like this kind of a huge architectural experimentation, you have to have a huge budget for it.
Right.
Like Frank O'Gehry buildings and all those. Cost.
Yeah, of course it costs. It costs a lot of money. If you want to get a really nice building, it costs a lot of money. But there's also, I mean, I don't know. I was talking about it with Keely, especially in the United States. The public does not have taste. And they're not necessarily ready for contemporary architecture. You know, if you show them something by, Rem Koolhaas or something like that, or Zaha Hadid, they're going to look, that's weird. they just still think in traditional architecture styles.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I guess yes, but when they feel it, when they experience it, they like it.
Yeah, but you know.
I mean, also like, for example, in Europe, they don't see like this a huge project. Mostly architects find like, they adopt Dubai as a field for experimentation.
Yeah,
Dubai, it's like, in this golf area, because
they have a lot of money, so let's try all our crazy ideas.
Yeah, so let's see crazy ideas, and actually it works. Actually, they do really beautiful buildings, but still not convinced for the huge cities for
right.
Europe.
Well, Dubai's a pretty big city, though.
Well, yeah, it's extended. I mean, they eat in the sea.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go back to your thing. So you wanted to you decided to go on your own. You come back to THU after a year because obviously you like you said, you know what it is. This is a pilgrimage. I call it my pilgrimage.
Yeah.
and so you come here and you're going to try to look at a lot of the B-side talks.
Actually, I'm going to be more focusing about B-side. I'm looking forward for Scott and Shuzo talk and even Molly.
Yeah.
Because Molly is really good at using social media.
Yeah.
And I've talked with her yesterday and she will remain about it, how she succeed with her business.
Yeah, interesting, because she's going to be on the podcast too. I asked her to come on, so it'll be great.
Yes.
I'm excited about hearing her stuff. But so, and she's really cool. She's really cool.
Yeah. Definitely.
So, and then what are some of the... What business you want to do? What kind of business you want to do?
Meanwhile, I'm working for my visual ArcVis architectures, and I want to see adopt the business skills for my architectural business.
Interesting.
Yes, I mean, getting client, getting marketing, the branding processes, social media use, those ideas. For me personally, I'm lack of it.
Right, you lack it.
I'm lack it. Yes, exactly.
But I see you on Facebook.
I'm trying my best.
Okay. So, what do you think the secret is in terms of social media?
presence. I mean the daily presence, I guess.
Right. You have to do it
daily. You have to find a managed daily presence, and the material that you expose it.
Right.
Should be like attractive.
Right.
Because everybody is doing nowadays tutorial. Everybody like doing pictures, but still until now, there's some people like, you know, they are remarkable. People follow them and they know their own things. Right. So you have to find like a point, and you be leader of it.
Right. And it's also consistency, right? You have to be a regular. This is what I learned when I did this podcast, right? The number one thing as I started looking at doing podcasts is like, be regular. Yeah. And so I make it, this comes out every Monday, right? So it's, I know like every Monday people are ready for the podcast, and they see it regularly, right? As opposed to like, I could release 5 and then not do one for a month. People will forget about you, right?
I mean, one of the interesting things like 3 weeks ago in D2 conference is people works. I mean, how he has like 10 years of consistency of doing artwork daily.
Oh yeah. What's his name again?
People?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how he shot like since 10 years, every day he do like post it at 12 o'clock. I post my own new artwork.
Right. Is that okay? That's probably, I'll have to get that later. Hold on. Let's pause it for a second.
Yep.
I'm wondering if someone's trying to call him. Okay, so consistency. You got to do consistency. So that's the other thing that you learn about it, right? So if you find a regular thing and people go to your feed and they see a daily picture. I mean, daily pictures are hard, right?
I mean, the idea is how to manage your own times, how to find the times. Right. This is like, the skills alone, you have to master it.
Right.
And one of the benefits actually is with my mentorship with Alan McKay.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things like that, he was also always focusing about business side, and he was always focusing about how to master your own times and how to master your own skills.
Right.
And
he's very good at marketing, as a person.
Yeah, as marketing as a person, he's master on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's brilliant. He know how to manage his own time. How to break his own time.
Mm-hmm.
This is this idea that I want to learn it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because he does mostly on his own. I know Alan, and he's been on my podcast, and so he's really, really good at it. I'm just curious about, what you're getting out of it, which I think is good. I think you're right. He's very good at understanding how to market yourself.
Yeah, another aspect also for freeing your times and engaging for social media is using the automation. You learn how to automate in this course, how to do scripting, how to do tools.
Right.
So you are automating everything for you.
Right.
So you build your own library, so you don't need to do everything, so repeating everything.
Right.
Stuff like taking so much time, so you start to focus one bit by bit.
Right.
And the presence by showing people, and this is what why we're more engaged in those conferences, is showing your own artwork and have feedbacks.
Right. Yeah, no, I like this, and there's also a lot of basically just going up to people and say, anyone, yeah. Right? And people going to some of the most famous artists out there and say, can you critique my work?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so do you have a name for your business? Are you going to start your business now, or are you just basically freelancing?
I'm just started since the beginning of this year, because freelancing in Germany is basically you have to establish a company.
Okay.
It's considered as a company called Einzelunternehmer or solo companies.
Mm-hmm.
So I started since the beginning of this year, and we'll see where it's going to be.
Is it going well so far?
I mean, lately, yes.
Right.
I mean, lately, because I am started to concentrate more towards real estate more than architects.
Right. So you go directly to the developer.
Yes.
Well, that's the smart thing. That's what the big ArcViz companies do. They don't work with architects. They work with developers.
I mean, because the architect mostly is catch me if you can, and it's a competition.
Right. Yes. And the real estate agent is the one that actually needs the marketing material.
Yeah.
So so you've got some real estate agents that you've been working with?
I mean, lately, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you've been doing some good work for them? And is it animation or stills or?
Mainly now stills.
Right.
And some graphics mm-hmm. for them.
And interiors or?
Both. Both for them.
So. Yeah. What kind of work is it? I mean, what kind of real estate is it? Is it residential or?
I mean, no. I because my portfolio is mainly for larger scale buildings.
Yeah, okay.
High rise.
Okay.
Buildings and commercials.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm focusing more toward this. I try to have more of residential because mainly Germany is residential.
Okay.
But the good things by RV is you don't need to stuck within your own area. You can like starting sending to Europe, the whole Europe, and work for them all.
Okay.
So you have to find the market that fit your own portfolio and
right.
the clients.
So you're working outside of Europe as well, or you want to work outside of Europe in terms of some real estate companies?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Do you ever think about going back to the Middle East?
I mean, I like the living in Europe, basically.
So okay.
I mean, the freedom in Europe, basically. I mean, in terms of financial and everything, definitely Middle East is 10 times better than...
It's cheaper.
Not just cheaper. I mean, what you gain is much better than
right.
What you gain in Europe. Because in Middle East, you don't have these taxes things.
Right.
Especially in Dubai, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, you don't have it.
Right.
They have the money.
Right.
And they have the works.
Right.
Yeah.
But the taxes are very low.
No taxes.
There's no taxes.
No taxes.
Yeah. Well, but you know, at the same, yeah, it's different.
I mean, it's different. I mean, it depends on the project. I mean, the good things about it, as I said, like you need to work from your own office.
Right.
Globally, doesn't need to be on site unless you are an architect or unless you are the...
Right. And you can. I mean, a lot of people just work from home.
Yeah.
So, and that works really well. So what are some of the, what are your favorite tools to use?
Max tools. Max, 3ds Max, VRAs.
Yeah.
And AutoCAD. Nowadays, because I work for FX, so basically all Max plugins from
right.
FX, Thinking Particles.
Right. And do you have you done Revit stuff as well, or?
Yeah, a little bit, because nowadays it's needed to do like Revit, to
right.
do BIM.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the world of arc. When I was in ArcViz, it, you know, was a long, long time ago. Or I was an architect, but they didn't have ArcViz back then. There was just like the guy in the office that knows how to do this stuff. It was me. so it's been a while since I've done it, but it has changed a lot, and there's a lot more people that can just
Nowadays, for example, in Germany nowadays, like BIM is necessary as an architect skills.
Right.
They are looking for it, and they are looking for one like BIM technical specialized
with. And is in the BIM side for in Germany, is it mostly Revit that they're
yes.
using?
Okay. Yeah. Revit and ArchiCAD.
ArchiCAD.
Both
yes.
of them used.
Right. I didn't know ArchiCAD was a BIM package, or is it?
Is it?
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. Nowadays, is it?
It is. Yeah, well, it has to be, I guess. That's the only way to go.
Yeah.
And what do you think is, since, you know, it seems to have a very strong and good opinion about architecture and some of the ways it's gone lately. What do you think the tools have done to influence design?
I mean, definitely 3DS, 3D tools, 3D package, 3ds Max, Cinema 4D.
Right.
Also, Reno and Grasshopper has been changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole idea of doing parametric design and the easy of scripting.
Right.
I mean, Grasshopper is easy way to script.
Right.
And this led to have more experimentation in your own design, not stacking with the cube shapes.
Right.
And nowadays also the 3D printing.
Yeah.
I mean, play a huge role. Because nowadays also the actual model play a huge role in the designs.
Right.
And when you do it in 3Ds.
Right.
Yeah,
but I think that, of course it does. And so that's kind of my point. So you're right, that things like Rhino and Grasshopper that tool liberates a certain level of design.
Yeah.
But don't you think like when you see something, a building, and you go, that was done in Grasshopper. right?
Yeah, sure.
Because it looks like a grasshopper parametric design thing. So you're wondering who designed the building. Mm-hmm. Is it the tool or is it the person, right? Because sometimes a person just like doesn't go away from like the default values of that.
Yeah, exactly. That. I mean, it's a random value and it's depend on the shape. I mean,
right.
It's, you know, by chance how the shape looks like.
Sure.
And if you adapt it and fit within the function of the architecture, then yeah.
But because I always look around, I see a building with a very, you know, organic lattice shaped facade. I'm like, yeah. Rhino. Rhino
is ketchup. Also.
Right. And so the same, you know, and there's always, but that's the thing, like while it's interesting, I think that there's something that's from the imagination that is harder for the architect to sort of express, you know?
Exactly. I mean, visualization helped a lot. This tools helps a lot to visualize how the buildings looks like, to
right.
influence it, because the traditional way is by drawing.
Right.
And even if you are really good drawer, you're not going to be able to do these complex parametric designs.
Sure.
And they are like depend mostly on math equations. You don't.
Sure. No. Yeah. And random chance too.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. I mean, even when I was talking to Patrick Schumacher, he was like, he likes the random chance that happens, right?
Yes.
Right. So that's an important part of it. You know, I mean, very popular when I was in school, in architecture school, was the book on chaos theory.
Yeah.
Because that was like, oh. And so they were trying to apply that, like just, you know, random chaotic fractals and stuff like that are very important towards like figuring out different design process. But don't you also think that BIM, as an example, right? The way that you BIM is working and the way that it forces you straight into, not I don't want to say force, but sort of because of the way that BIM is and the way you model inside of a BIM package, no. Don't you think that that influences the architecture decisions?
I mean, yes, for sure.
Because
now we have like a good idea about everything, starting
right.
from constructions to electricity to everything.
And so BIM is going to say, it's going to force you to model in a more, or create a building that ends up being much more traditional because that's what it's designed to do, is just to make traditional buildings.
I mean, it's more towards the realistic.
Well, it doesn't like, have, I mean, what's, why is it necessarily, what makes it, what define realistic? Realistic
I,
is just.
I mean, not realistic, let's say like the actual architecture, not the experimental architecture.
Right, yeah. I've always been interested in the process, you know, like for example, the morphosis concept, right, of exploring shape,
yeah.
and what Tom Main was doing back then, and as they explore it on a computer, then they 3D print it, and then they work off the 3D printer and model on top of yeah. that, and they constantly shape making, right, and it was really kind of interesting, and then the other one is like. You know, you can talk to Frank Gehry, and Frank Gehry will basically just model everything by hand
exactly.
with some random pieces of paper.
And then get the shape.
And then say, here you go, you build that. Figure out how to build that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to touch the computer, but get that fancy CATIA package. And
he has now like master class, I guess.
Yeah, I know.
Do it. I'm really interested about to learn the process from him, how he do it.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily, honestly, I'd much rather see the experimentation that's done in, you know, from the Tom Main perspective rather than from the
Gehry.
I think Gehry's, listen, the results are beautiful. The results
sure.
of the buildings and Frank Gehry's buildings are beautiful. I actually like the old Frank Gehry buildings before he even had computers,
yeah.
which were like chicken wire and.
Yeah, but he has his own software, Gehry Technology software.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is funny because he hates. Computers.
Yeah.
But they had to develop a lot just to figure out how to build whatever he was putting
that's
down.
True.
Yes, and that's cool. That's cool. And why? Okay, let's go back to that, right? Because that's the same question. Frank Gehry had to make his own software because no software can make Frank Gehry architecture.
Yes, exactly.
So isn't that the problem with the software, right? In the sense that the software is the limitation that doesn't allow you to...
Yeah, but I guess this is the like the old age. Nowadays, you can adapt everything within technologies.
Right.
Since you are using... You have to be brilliant in math and just scripted everything.
Right.
Scripting helped a lot for Grasshopper, Python. So.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I went to Herzog & de Meuron's office in Basel in Switzerland, and they were creating they have a 3D team there, or they're not even a 3D team. They're basically like a team of people that help some of the visualization and other things that are going on, and it for the design process, not just to do renderings. And the guys who help script things to help the designers.
Yeah.
So it's like, I need a program that, you know, just by randomly clicking on things, it'll create something that does this. And so they do these programs to help people like do Rhino's things or whatever it is in scripting.
I mean, I guess they use it for Elbphilharmonie in Hamburg, the new.
Yes. Yeah, which is awesome. I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, so what would you like to see changed? What would you want to do? I don't think you just want to make visualization.
No, I don't want to just make visualization for Minoise. I mean,
it's a good bread and
I
butter.
I mean, I guess I need to use my architecture and visualization skills and get the benefit of them towards visual effects.
So you want to take that into visual effects?
I mean, I want to try to go towards visual effects to have like some experience in this field.
I don't think, you know, honestly speaking, I'm going to tell you this. I don't think you want to do visual effects. I think you want to do movies. I think you want to actually create. Look, the way you're sounding sounds more like what I remember from Joe Kaczynski.
Okay.
Okay. So Joe is an architect. Do you know who Joe is?
No.
Oh, you don't know who Joe is? Mm-hmm. Okay, Joe is the director on the movie Tron Legacy and Oblivion, etc. So he graduated from Columbia Architecture School about a year after I did. So I was following his. He was really good at visualization too, right? Or CG back then. Yeah. There was no visualization. So, and then he started KD Labs and did a lot of stuff there, and then he went on to do movies. David Fincher noticed his work and said, "Oh, we should start doing it." So if you look at like Oblivion or you look at Tron Legacy, you'll see the architecture influence that's involved in that design process. And it's not just him. He hired some really good concept artists to work with him, like the Daniel Simon and all those other guys to do the incredible work was going on. So I think that you should think about doing what you're doing and not just be an artist in visual effects. I think you should think about taking what you're doing and make a short film out of it.
Yeah, well, probably yes. I mean, there's some ideas.
Yeah, they are. And there's actually some great talks this week. We should note that we're recording it before THU even started. Yeah. But there's some great talks this week that are happening around that idea. One of them is from Roy Robinson, who's a friend of mine, who I introduced him to Andre, who invited him here. But he made shorts, and his talk is a little bit B-side. Talk. I think the title of his talk is "How to Make a Short Film to Get Noticed by Hollywood Douchebags." So you should actually. I think you'd like it. I think this should consider it. At least consider it.
I mean, yes. I mean, definitely things. I mean, also one of the influence of architecture and movies when you see like Inception or you see like Doctor Strange.
Right.
This huge shifting and transformation, they combine this visual effect FX with the architecture.
Right.
Something like that, like I'm more attracted to it and more what I want to do.
Yeah, well, I think that's what you can do. You can introduce that more apparently. Yeah. I believe you're absolutely correct that architecture does have a role to play. I think that what's interesting about it, and you know because you went to architecture school, what's interesting about architects is that they don't realize that one of the number one skills that you have, especially if you're a good architect, is pitching.
Yeah.
Storytelling.
Exactly.
You tell the story of the building, right? Because what do you do almost every day when you're presenting your design, you say, you have to pitch it. You have to explain it. You have to present it. And so architects are actually very good at telling stories. But what's interesting about the way they tell stories is they tell it in a non-linear way.
Yeah.
Which is actually cool because it allows you to experience it more as a first person, but films are more third person experiences. But I think it's really interesting.
We'll see what it's going on.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. Just something to consider because I think your ideas are very valid, and I think I'm 100% behind you. I believe that architects do have to have a better influence on the visual arts in general, as well as the entertainment industry. Yeah. And I think that this could be really good. Well, cool. We're coming up on an hour. So, is there anything else you want to talk about or mention?
Yes, everything is fine.
No, you did. This was great. I'm really glad we were able to run into you. What did you think of D2 this year?
Well, actually, it's really cool. This is the first time for me in ArcViz events, actually.
Right.
And it's great to see what other companies are doing, how
right.
they lead their own marketings, and
yep.
and how they. Where they are in technology processing, especially like
right.
using for the virtual reality nowadays and ARs.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Did you see
Solis?
Paul Nichols.
Yeah,
Paul Nichols was there, and he had Factory 15. I mean, that's example of something that you could think about.
I mean, yes, yeah. I mean, I'm so fan with the Factory 15
right.
and their own tendency, but. They tend to do more random things. They're random stories for them.
Okay, so what's wrong with that?
No. And so, yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of the announcement we had?
I mean, it was shocking for me. I'm more VR user.
Right.
And I'm looking forward, actually, because to be honest, I really think Corona is really powerful render engines.
Right.
And the merge is going to be like... for benefit for both sides.
Yeah, I see it that way.
I mean, I am with the people, like, there's not going to be, like, this competition anymore in between both of them.
No, but there's going to be collaboration. Sometimes collaboration is better than competition. Right?
I mean, according to the history of CG...
No.
And listen, acquiring is always like killing the software.
There is only a few examples, mostly by a certain company, that causes this the problem. But I see lots of different examples where it's not necessarily a problem. Sure. Let's say when people said the same thing, like, why would Facebook buy Instagram? They thought they were going to kill Instagram because Instagram was taking too much of Facebook. Yeah. But that's not the case. They kept both, and they grew even more business.
Well, I hope for that. I mean, I'm looking forward for it.
Right.
To use both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, this is great. I'm so glad we could do this. This was a great conversation.
Thank you so much for hosting me.
Yeah, absolutely.